I'd like you to welcome with me Patricia Graham, Patricia Ahlberg Graham. Thank you very much. I'd like just to speak informally for a few minutes and then turn it open to questions, because I suspect that you have a better sense of what you would like to know about the National Institute of Education or about me than I do. I understand that there's one of the things that we might address is how it is that we happen to get chosen for the jobs that we currently hold. And I suppose that I'm fond of saying somewhat facetiously that the reason it seems to me that I was fit to take a job in the federal government is that I had had some experience with the bureaucracy. In 1955, when my husband and I were married, we went on our honeymoon, and you may think this is a little roundabout way of getting to this, we went on our honeymoon to an island in Lake Superior, which we were very enamored, where my family had had a cottage for many years. And the family had used it with all the miscellaneous cousins, of whom I think I have 27 first cousins. And my husband and I were there by ourselves on our honeymoon, naturally. He thought the island was terrific, but he was a little hesitant at spending the rest of his summers with 27 of my first cousins, and he was interested in acquiring the lighthouse that had recently been decommissioned by the Coast Guard on the island. He thought what he'd really like to do was own a lighthouse. Well, from 1955 until 1972, we negotiated with the federal government for the purchase of that lighthouse. And after 17 years of correspondence and dealing with the federal bureaucracy, we finally got it. And so I suppose that speaks to the issue of patience and the issue of the interest in the federal government. Let me say a bit about NIE and why it seemed to me that it was a job that I would like to do. As you've heard, I've been a high school teacher in a rural slum school and in an urban slum school and in a in-between urban school. I've taught on the college level, I've done research, and I've been an administrator. I suppose that the reason that I was picked for the NIE job is in many ways a reverse attribute, a reverse way of thinking about the what I consider to have been the systematic discrimination against women in professional employment in this century. Namely, for the National Institute of Education, which is worried about supporting research activities that are really going to benefit education in this country, the criticism had been that too many people at NIE were ivory towered. And what they wanted at the head of NIE was somebody who had had practical experience in the schools, but who also had some distinction as a researcher and who had also administered something. Well, no man would ever in his right mind have followed the career path that I did, insofar as it was not a logical pattern to follow. I mean, I started teaching in Norfolk, Virginia, because the other offers I had were to write the internal house organ for Royster Guano or Smith Douglas Chemical Fertilizer, and neither of those appealed to me very much, and so I got a high school teaching job. I picked up teaching jobs wherever my husband went in subsequent years and adjusted when I went to graduate school and when I worked in accordance with his. What that meant was that I had a very much more disparate career pattern than most men who go on to careers in educational research or educational administration. And in this instance, that proved to be a terrific advantage. And I think it's also the reason that I took the job at NIE, because I'd been in various parts of worrying about various aspects of education in this country over the years, and this seemed to me to be an opportunity to do something about it in a different way. The question, I think, for the federal government is what legitimate role, if any, does it have to play in education? And as you know, education in this country is thought to be a state and local matter. And why, and the question has indeed come up, is what is it that the federal government should do in behalf of education efforts? Well, for me, that answer is quite simple. The principal role of the federal government in education is an equity question. and it is a question of providing access to a quality education for all Americans. And by the code word, so far as I'm concerned, for all that is that what the federal government wants to do in its research programs is to figure out ways to reduce the predictive value of race, sex, and social class for educational achievement. We now know, for example, that if you are a youngster growing up in a low-income family, there is less likelihood that you're going to be an academic success than if you grow up in a high-income family. We know that if you're black, you are less likely than if you are white to be an academic success. We know that if you're a girl, you are less likely to be an academic success in mathematics than you are if you're a boy. And the essence of what the National Institute of Education is about is to try to figure out ways which can, in fact, assist us in reducing those inequities in educational achievement between among the races, the sexes, and social class. Now, I am not so naive that I think that we are going to get to do that anytime soon. That is, those problems are so deep and so fundamental in the society that no effort in my lifetime or in my daughter's lifetime is going to change that. But the fact that the problem is difficult does not mean that we should avoid it, that we should not just be looking to solve the problems that are easy to solve. It seems to me that we got to look to solve the really tough and difficult problems. And so that's what NIE was founded as an agency to do, to address equity issues in education, and it is what we are intending to do with a renewed commitment as we move ahead. Let me just speak very briefly about some particular kinds of activities that we're doing. We estimate that in this current fiscal year, right around $6 million will be focused for research projects that deal specifically with issues having to do with women in education. And these will be split up in some of the following ways. We expect to be spending, for example, about $1 million on conferences dealing with minority women's educational needs and the peculiar needs that are true for black women, for Hispanic women, for Native American women, for other minorities. We're supporting the Commission on Working Women, which has got a booth downstairs, and to look at what the educational needs are for women who work in 80% of the jobs in which women work, which are essentially non-professional jobs. We're putting in well over $1 million into a film program, which we anticipate will be on public broadcasting PBS channels that deals with occupational segregation. It's aimed at pre-adolescent, junior high school, early high school girls. It's called Freestyle, in which we have a series in which we intend to show girls that age making preparation and taking as jobs which are non-traditional for women. The pilot film on that is called Grease Monkey, and it deals with a junior high school age girl who gets a summer job working for an auto repair shop. It's kind of funny, actually. We are spending about $750,000 on the issue of women in mathematics, various projects related to why it is that girls have trouble with mathematical concepts. We're spending about $800,000 on vocational education studies that look at sex discrimination in vocational education. As you know, most vocational education that for which girls are included is either home economics or consumer-oriented. And it seems to us that it's very difficult to make a living in either one of those categories. And while nobody objects to somebody who can bake a gorgeous pound cake, that probably the most important vocational education is not dealing with that question. We're going to have an open grants program of over $1 million for equity-related concerns. And I don't know what proportion of those will end up going to women, but certainly a substantial, I would guess that a substantial portion would. So far, we also have about $100,000 going to career education and sex role values studies there. We have Just over a million dollars, which will be go for our women and minority training fellowships. Up to now, most of the work that I've been describing is for women's and girls' education at the college level or below. That is particularly oriented toward women or toward high school girls. We're also very concerned, in addition to that real concern that we have for girls and high school women and working women, we're also concerned about the educational research establishment. And it does seem to us that the educational research establishment, the primary positions that are held in the leading universities and leading concerns that deal with educational research, that do the research, that set the agenda for determining what the important problems are in education, have a real shortage of women and minorities in those fields. And therefore, we're putting about $1 million into training programs for women and minorities at the pre-doctoral and the post-doctoral levels. The idea being that we thereby have a pool of people who are available. And more than just a training function, we are very concerned that we give women and minorities the informal skills of getting acquainted with how the informal networks work and which things really get done that you don't ever read in a textbook that tells you how to behave in an organization. That seems to us to be a particular concern for professional women and minorities at that stage of the game. You know, you need to be able to figure out if you go to a prestige research university that when they tell you that promotion is based on service, on teaching, and on research, that it is unwise to allocate two-thirds of your time to the former and only one-third to the latter, that you're a whole lot better off to understand that the tenure decision is going to be made not on your committee service, where you're the token woman on every committee, or on your teaching performance in which you counsel all your women students very carefully, and that you don't get around to doing your research because of these other more pressing demands on your time. You've got to realize that the issues really are in these other areas. In any case, we're putting substantial portion of money into those kinds of concerns because we think that that is also an important issue if we're going to change the value structure in educational research over time. We also have about $35 million in uncommitted funds, which, given the equity mandate of the agency, will be used for equity-related activities but are not specifically earmarked for women's activities. So there's, you know, in terms of some federal programs, that's not a lot of money, but I can tell you, as somebody who was at the Radcliffe Institute trying to put together fellowship programs for women and put together continuing education program for women before I did this, this looks like a lot of money to me to be able to devote to women. Let me stop there and turn it over to you to raise whatever questions you'd like to raise with me, either about NIE or anything else that's related. Yes. All we're doing, we got a whole lot of other of special programs for teachers, most of which are aimed at in-service programs for teachers. We're looking at teachers in two ways. One is as the people who are most directly involved with young people in the classroom and helping teachers to become more successful with the students with whom they work, and more successful being that the students are learning more. And then we're also looking at the role, in a quite separate issue of looking at teachers, we're looking at the role of teachers within the organizational format of a school setting. That is, I'm very much very well aware of the fact that 99.4% of the school superintendents in this country are men, whereas well over 80% of the elementary teachers are women, and somewhere around 60% to three-quarters of the secondary teachers are women. But those are not the people who are selected for the administrative positions, sometimes because they don't want it, but more often because they're not asked. And we're therefore looking at the role of teachers within the organizational structure of a school so to permit them to play a larger role within that organizational structure. Yeah. The forgot that I was supposed to repeat the question. The previous question was about teachers, and this question is about women on the approaches to the decision-making process. Do you mean within the National Institute of Education itself or within the educational system generally? The question that she is raising is about the distribution, as I understand it, about the distribution of women throughout the professional educational system, so that there will, in fact, be qualified women for the top jobs when, as those jobs become available. Yes, we're very concerned about that. That's a large part of what this focus on the postdoctoral training fellowships for women is supposed to address. That is, it is to make these, to give these women all the credentials they could need and to get them plugged into the network so they will be selected to serve on X committee with which they will meet Y superintendent or a Z professor or dean of a school of education who will then recommend him to, recommend her to his friend at M University, where she will be considered for a position which she will ultimately take at Q University. So we're concerned about that generally through the training program. We're concerned about that by increasing the number of women who serve on our external review panels. For example, we have just put together, with the help of the Congress, who gave us a little guidance on this matter, a panel to review the 17 regional labs and centers around the United States. And Congress, in its wisdom, I think, felt that we needed to be given a little direction in terms of how to put this panel together. So they said that we could only choose for that panel people who had been nominated. And there was a nomination period that was announced publicly in which a batch of people, 400 and some, got nominated. Now, we were free within that group who were nominated to choose whoever we liked, again, keeping in mind certain political issues like a mix of teachers and administrators and researchers and so on. I am delighted to report that on that 15-person panel, there are 8 women, 4 blacks, and 1 Hispanic. I think it's one of the first panels that that NIE has put together that is a really important, vital panel in which there are a majority of women. And I would say that each one of the women who is on that panel is absolutely a crackerjack. That is, there is not a single token woman on there who's there because she represents the state of Indiana and rural interests of rural farm interests or something of that kind. I mean, they're all good. So we're concerned at NIE about addressing issues in that respect. We're also very concerned about our own personnel practices at NIE. And as we look to the future, we intend to have a office reporting directly to the Office of the Director, which will monitor the personnel practices within the agency from the point of view of quality and equity concerns. And we'll also be concerned about the personnel practices of the money to whom we give grants, the people to whom we give grants, as well as contracts for what their equity hiring patterns are. Because although I think it is essential that we look to our own house and keep our own house in order on these matters, it's when you give away $90 million a year that you're really going to have some effect on these things as opposed to just your own salary and expense budget. Within NIE itself, when I came, I hired 2 deputies. And in the federal parlance, I mean, it's very difficult to keep track of what is. In some cases, an assistant secretary is better than a deputy this or whatever. But anyway, in our system, there's a director, and then there is a deputy, and then there are associate directors. And when I hired, when I came this summer, I hired 2 deputies, one of whom is a white male, the other is an Asian American female. And they have different areas of expertise, but both are excellent in the kind of activity in which they do. And we are now going to have 2 senior positions open, and I can tell you we are going to be doing a rigorous search to look for qualified individuals, and we believe that qualified individuals can be found, persons of both sex and all races. Yes. Yes. Uh, I wonder, you said that we're going to give some money to teachers, but I didn't understand the last part of your question. You're interested in how you can get better teachers in your community, right? Or how you can get your school board to get money to get better teachers? Right. Yeah. Well, what state do you live in? Texas. Okay. You're in a good state in lots of ways. The question you're raising is, how do we get teachers to communicate more effectively with their students, right? And how do we find out about that? The question that she's raising is, yes, I'm just repeating it because I was told I was supposed to repeat the questions for the benefit of the tape recorder. Well, the underlying problem, as you see it, is that teachers do not know how to communicate with kids. Let me say that, as I'm sure all of you recognize, that for the last 20 years, when we looked at educational research questions, we always tended not to look at the teachers, at working with the existing teachers. We had a strategy that we were going to develop a new curriculum that would be, in the name of its inventors, teacher-proof curriculum, which was to minimize the role of the teacher. Well, it turned out, of course, that didn't work. That was just dumb to think of that. We had the vision that all the teachers who are in this working in the schools are utter klutzes, so the thing to do is to bring in lots of new teachers who will, the new blood will drive out that bad old blood, and out of that we got a whole bunch of MAT programs that were supposed to attract bright liberal arts graduates who were then supposed to be committed teachers. Of course, at that time, nobody had looked at the birth rate and had realized that we weren't going to need lots of new teachers. Again, that was dumb. I hope we're not going to be dumb yet a third time. What we're doing now is concentrating on the teachers who are presently in the schools. You know, women like me, 44 years old, got 21 more years to give to the schools. If not, depending on the mandatory retirement age, maybe we'll go up to 70. Worry about what you're going to do with that cadre of tenured teachers who are going to be in the schools for quite a while. Now, a lot of those teachers came in to teach when they thought they were going to have a quite different student body from the one with whom they are currently working. And it occurs to us that not all of those teachers, some of them yes, but perhaps not all of them, are as effective as they might be in dealing with the classroom realities that they face. So, we're doing several things, and some of them we're doing in Texas, and that's why I particularly mention that. At the University of Texas at Austin, there is a Center for Research and Development in Education, which NIE supports to a handsome degree annually, we think it's handsome. I'm sure they don't think it's as handsome. And the activities in which they are engaged are addressed exactly to this question. What do you do with teachers to make them more effective with kids? And I was over there yesterday, and they have a very neat little booklet which they pass out to teachers, which this is particularly aimed at elementary teachers, that is not so long, but what a teacher could read it after the end of a long, hard day in the classroom and after fixing dinner in the evening. It's the kind of thing you can read between 8:30 and 9:15 in the evening and still get a lot out of it. And it gives some very simple hints, which maybe you just never thought about how, for example, what a difference it makes to kids when you have them in a little group and you got them in a semicircle sitting in front of you, and whether you ought to always call the one who raises the child who raises his or her hand, or whether you ought to develop some other method for calling on those children to ensure the full participation of each child. Well, they got some specific hints on something that's as basic as that. They've got some other materials that talk to teachers about how they should behave at the first few days of the class, because anybody who remembers their own days in school know that as a student, you make up your mind about the teacher the first two or three days as to whether this teacher is going to be a pushover, whether this teacher is serious. Well, a teacher has got to realize that they're making up their mind about her, and this is not the moment to come on and say, oh, I love all you children, but to come on and say, children, it's a pleasure to be working with you this year. We're going to have a wonderful year, and we're going to work hard. And to set the tone that it's going to be a serious business and that she expects every child in that classroom to learn a lot. Well, the work which is going on at the University of Texas, which in conjunction with the Austin Independent School District, is an example of precisely the kind of work in which you're interested in. At NIE, we've sponsored some activities in a field known as dissemination. Dissemination is the new buzzword in education. And basically what dissemination means is that people who are practically involved in the field of education as teachers and administrators get together with researchers, figure out what important problems are they'd like information about, and then researchers generate some answers to those problems and get them back in some palatable form that's in plain English, hopefully. We have a variety of material that we about teaching, which we would be happy to make available to you if you'd like. It's also distributed through the states, through the chief state school officers in the state, superintendent of public instruction. Yeah. The question is, do I have anything to suggest specifically for people who are working with adult learners and particularly in community college settings? I'll tell you, I've got a couple of names to suggest to you of people at NIE who are working particularly with projects in that area, and I would think that the best thing to do would be to write to them directly and say to them what your special interests are, and then they can recommend material to you. And the two people whom I would suggest are Jeffrey Schiller, S-C-H-I-L-L-E-R, and probably Dan Sokolow, S-O-K-O-L-O-W, at the National Institute of Education, Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, Washington, D.C., 20208. And Schiller has coordinated a good deal of the work that we are doing with adult learners in community colleges, and Sokolow has been doing some continuing education work. And so they could, if you tell them what you're interested in, they can probably respond better than I can in a more general way. Yes. The question has to do with a woman who is now with an international corporation in education activities who'd like to move into academic setting and wonders if our grants go only to institutions or do they go to individuals. We have grants both to institutions and to individuals, but normally an individual needs to have an institutional tie. Now, those institutional ties, if an individual gets a grant, can frequently be negotiated by the individual with some institution which is extremely happy to collect the overhead. But that would depend on what connections you have with the institution that you used to work for, went to school at, or have friends at, or something of that kind. That's right. And the way to get an individual grant is to review the requests for proposals that we list in the Federal Register, to be in touch with our unsolicited proposal process, which we this year will have about $3 million in our unsolicited proposal, which is more than we've had in the past. Your chances are better off to apply to us under an RFP or under a grants announcement than they are under the unsolicited proposals, because the batting average in terms of the number of people we can give money to is better for RFPs and grants announcements than it is for unsolicited proposals. Yes. that's true. I would say that we do not have any division that deals simply with the intellectually gifted, but we do deal with the intellectually gifted in a variety of other areas. For example, we anticipate that we're going to have a major unit of NIE that deals with issues of teaching and learning. And one of the reasonable fields to look at in terms of language acquisition or learning theory is that of the gifted. It's not the only one, obviously, but it's certainly one. We have been supporting over the years Project Talent, which is a longitudinal study of intellectually gifted individuals who are now mostly in their 30s. They start out much younger. we are concerned about keeping this database alive so that we can follow the progress of intellectually gifted individuals. As a research question, we sometimes feel that we are providing really a service to sociologists by keeping this database alive, because the educational needs of intellectually gifted individuals in their 30s is not the only reason to keep that database alive. We're interested really in what happens to, I mean, we in the society are ought to be interested, in my view, in what happens to these people, and what impediments do they encounter, and so on. And what things are, what's, what are supported, so that we can do more of that kind of thing. Yes, it can. You can get either through us or through the American Institute of Research in Stanford, California.